Well, hello everyone. I'm Brian and today is Saturday, May 21st, 2022 and this is episode 100 and let's see, 113. I did update my notes. 113 of the Lots Project podcast and it's titled Coffee with Brian featuring Joel Valenzuela. Joel is a cryptocurrency and decentralized advocate. And decentralization advocate, excuse me. He's been living off crypto since 2015 and unbanked since 2016. Excited to have him on and talk about freedom and crypto and the things we can do in our lives to be as free as possible. Just a little heads up, this is streaming, I believe, on Telegram right now. I'm getting that all figured out. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's not. I don't know. This is it's an experiment in the works, and I'm not sure if I actually ended it or if it's still going. No, it's still there, so that's good. All right. Got that checked off the list. And Comfrey Sales, if you want to get some Comfrey Root, Comfrey crown cuttings, get those orders in by noon tomorrow and they will be shipped out on Monday. Otherwise, you got to wait another week. You can get those at thelothproject.com/shop and then pick from the big Comfrey plant and all the choices that are there. Do take cryptocurrency on the site. 10% discount by using cryptocurrency checkout as your payment option. And so head over there today, check it out. Item of the week was the Jabra Active Elite 75T Bluetooth headphones. Link in the show notes for a review of those and a fix it when the volume drops off. It was the only issue I've ever had with them. Super easy fix. And so you can see that video also. Yeah, with that, I would like to bring on my guest. He's got about an hour to hang out, so I want to bring him up. If there's any audio issues or video issues in the show today, my internet is kind of wonky this morning because I got a storm coming in, and as it comes in, it might get worse or better. We will see. But with that, I'd like to bring on Joel Valenzuela, online also known as the Desert Lynx. That's where I found him on Float and started following him and checking him out. Hey, welcome to the show, Joel. How are you doing?
Hey, how's it going? I'm doing great. Finished my little coffee, my little weeny little cup of coffee, and I'm
Yeah. You guys are a little later out there. You're out on the East Coast, so yeah, I was having trouble. I used to do it at 11 o'clock because I had a bunch of West Coast guests that wanted to be on that I met out when I traveled out west for a little bit, and so I was doing it at 11 so they could get up and actually be up and around. And I was trying to find some East Coast guests, and they're like, man, that's like noon. Like, what do you want me to do at noon? So, yeah, it's that medium balance. Yeah. So, hey, how about you introduce yourself? I don't know how much of my audience knows you. I know I pull some people from Float, so I'm sure they've seen you around there, Twitter. But if people don't know you, who are you? And just a little background, and then we'll kind of pick up with a conversation.
Yeah, so I'm Joel, as you can see on the screen and stuff. I've been in the cryptocurrency space for around 9 years now, I guess. It's been a while. And basically, I was involved in kind of the think tanky world of the freedom movement in like nonprofit fundraising and stuff like that before. And then eventually, I just, you know, I kind of got tired of that stuff and I moved out from Arizona to New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project, which for anyone who hasn't heard about it, it's basically a project to move everyone who loves freedom onto one spot so they can actually make a difference and create an intentional community. And so in the process of doing that, as I kind of learned about cryptocurrency, like the year before I moved and then started to actually use it when I got here. And so, I was traveling through, passing through Chicago, and a friend of mine paid for his part of the pizza in Bitcoin. And of course, it had to be pizza, right? And I believe tomorrow might be Bitcoin Pizza Day, which is the commemoration of the first ever actual purchase of a good that people remember,
right?
A cryptocurrency. So yeah, it's kind of a convenient.
Nice. Yeah. I've used it. I pay for a bunch of stuff every month with it. Obviously, I'm not completely to using it, nothing but that. But yeah, when I first made that first purchase, I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then recently we've been messing around with a lot of Lightning stuff on Telegram and just Lightning addresses and tipping and micro tipping and figuring it out. And it's just like, it's kind of blowing my mind. After I asked you to come on, I heard your interview with Jack on his show, and you guys were talking about like the Dash stuff and the fold card, and it really piqued an interest. And then this Lightning shit popped up, and I was just like, holy shit. Like, this is definitely not just a geek thing anymore. Like, this is really, you can explain this to people and they can understand it. But one thing I do ask when we start the interview is the LOTS Project podcast, and LOTS stands for Living Outside the System. I like to ask people what that kind of means to them. It means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. A little bit in, all in, but what do you feel living outside the system entails and means?
Yeah, so that is, you know, it's a deceptively complicated question, but and it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. What I would first to define what living outside the system is, you have to define the system, or what do you mean by the system? In my estimation, the system is the government and other institutions and appendages that keep people reliant on the government and, you know, under the government. So that's the system. And for me, living outside the system is finding ways that prevent you, that kind of insulate you from direct control by those things. So for example, a great example of living on the system is living on government assistance or having a government job, right? That's like 100% in the system. And to a different degree, if you have like a corporate-ish 9-to-5, which has been, you know, infected with woke culture or whatever else, and you're paying like a big bucket in taxes, and you're kind of a slave to your car payment and things like that, like that kind of thing, where basically you might be having a fun, happy, and even fulfilling life, but where you just don't have very much wiggle room. You're just like, you're stuck right there, and you're very fragile to whatever the system decides to do. Like, they pass a new law that like regulates your industry, and all of a sudden, like, you know, what I like about this kind of concept is thinking about it this way is the last couple of years have been like the proof is in the pudding on this, where it became very obvious who was in the system and who wasn't in the system. Because first off, everyone who had, we'll get to that part later, but first off, everyone who had any kind of a normal job and did not want to take a certain medication, we'll call it, there was a significant amount of coercion, and then a lot of people who just like would never do it or talking a mean game on social media. You gotta feed your family, and if you're not gonna be able to feed your family, like it was like a real, like, this is how you're not free. It was a very stark kind of thing, very stark lesson there. And then also on a different level, but still part of the same project, the same overall package, then you have inflation, where now it's like, well, your life savings, you don't have the freedom to just like, you don't just save up. Like, the government does something and then your money's gone. And it's not just, oh, the money that they habitually take. It's like, well, now the stuff that's left over, they just decide that they're going to, you know, bail out like a bunch of, you know, stuff in Ukraine or whatever it ended up being. And then it's coming right out of your paycheck in an indirect way, right? Because you're losing the value of that money because it's getting inflated. And so they didn't like ask for that and whatever. And so that's a great like sign of like what it is to be in the system. And so being outside the system means quite a few things. Like, for example, being some sort of a self-employed person, I think is kind of necessary. It doesn't mean you're completely insulated from the system and you don't have to own a whole business. You can just be like a contractor or whatever. You can just, you know, take on contract work or whatever, have a consulting business, whatever it is, still work for other people, but just run your own thing where you can maybe can lose clients, but you're not going to get fired because it's you are the job kind of thing.
Right.
And then it's just like, well, someone says, oh, why aren't you, you know, X, Y, Z, like they're trying to coerce you into medical procedures or whatever. Like you just work for yourself. You just find a different client, you know? And if you're super
find somebody that's like-minded.
Yeah. And I have known some people who were super outspoken about that stuff who did kind of lose some clients or got like attacked at or, you know, for their business, but they still could be, you know, they might have had a little bit of a negative effect of being outspoken on the issue, but they didn't lose their job because it was their business. They could just do whatever they wanted with that. And it's not like the company can say, we don't want to blah, blah, blah. I think you need to have some sort of self-employment for one. And I do think that you have to, I think that to a certain extent, not having a giant financial overhead per month is a big thing, because when you're making, when everything you get, you're earning is going into bills and payments and things like that. You can't just be like, well, you know what? I'm going to just not take this work for now. I'm going to only, you know, then your whole life gets just knocked off that little fragile, you know, the precarious position. And I think that a lot of people do not realize how financially unfree they are because they haven't lost that freedom directly in the way that they did with, you know, a bunch of like bodily autonomy freedom in the last couple of years.
Right.
And like, I don't think that like the average person has roughly 100%, like let's just say 99%, maybe they get some cash in their pocket, but like 99% of everything they've worked hard for in the hands of some other people that the government can just tell to take away from you or restrict your use of that at a moment's notice. And I don't understand like how people, well, I mean, people just don't understand that. They just think it's their money, but it's not at this point. But I like, it's mind blowing to imagine like the anxiety I would have if that was my position, to where all everything that I need to survive is just all in someone else's hands, and they can stop me, they can restrict my access. If it comes down to that, that is being in the system, right? And so being outside,
yeah, you say the wrong thing and all of a sudden all your counts are zeros or they don't work or whatever. Yeah, that's kind of a spooky deal.
Yeah. And we're starting to come to the position where the greatest of all fiat currencies, right, the dollar, the king of the terrible monies, is starting to show signs of weakness. And it's at the point where if you have most of your money, or, you know, a significant amount, let's just say, in, you know, government money, there's a very real risk of losing that, you know, over a period of time. It's, you're not going to get more out of it. You're definitely going to get less, and it could be, you know, a lot less. So those are some good things to get out of the system. Now, of course, if you want to get really out of the system in other ways, like you could talk about get out of like modernity and like, oh, I'm going to live in the woods in the trailer and have my own pigs and cows and chickens and like all this kind of stuff, which is, you know, it's great. It's not feasible for everyone, but it is a kind of like, you don't have to worry about the supply chain or things like that as much. It's
well, yeah, that's kind of where you were talking about kind of the freedom of when they came through and you need the jab to have a job, or our situation was we didn't want to put the fucking mask on. So there was, you got to wear a mask, go to the grocery store. Well, we had set ourselves up that we had a freezer full of chickens and pork and a room full of supplies to where we didn't want to put a mask on. So we just didn't go to the fucking store. Like, it's just worked that way.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's a great, yeah. Like that's the kind of like the ultimate thing. It just really like a lot of people are just not in a position to recreate civilization, like from scratch for themselves. You know, it's like, do everything yourself. Like there's a reason why people live in societies and have, you know, economic multipliers of specialization and things like that. There's a reason for that. And obviously not everyone can. It's a good goal to be completely outside of, to be able to be completely like insulated. Then it's not like the scary part is we just can never completely be without reliance on someone else. Like, oh, like fuel. Are we going to drill for our own oil for this? Like, what happens if our solar panel breaks? Like, are we qualified electricians to like be able to fix that? What happened? Like, there's just always stuff you can't do everything, but you can do the major things, which is people can't take all your money. You know, they can't stop you from earning a living, and they can't, you know, they can't just like shut down your whole life like that. And so that's for me. Right. I mean, it's a very long-winded answer to this otherwise simple question, but there you go.
No, it is. It's a super easy but very deep question, and it's interesting to see the different ways people take it. And that answer was fantastic. That was probably the best one I've gotten since I started the show, because it's just a different look at it, and really how tied in we are to the systems that were just kind of like thrown upon us, and if you didn't pay attention, you were just sucked into them. It was like a black hole. And then there's some people that have kind of noticed that they were being sucked into the black hole and have kind of gotten out as much. But like you said, always kind of relying on some part of it. Like it's that interwoven. So I think my goal is to get as far out as I can. But there's always property tax. I mean, you always have to play a little bit into their game, I think. But there's definitely the outside for sure. So, so you said you moved up to New Hampshire to be part of the Free State Project. So that kind of leads me into Free State Project, freedom. Why does freedom matter so much to the individual? I think you kind of covered it in your living outside the system question, but freedom. Why does it matter so much?
Yeah, so I have a kind of a personal and a societal interest in freedom. Just on the personal level, I mean, breaking it down to almost stupidly simple, you're born and you're going to die someday. In between, there's a lot of time to do stuff. And if you do stuff that you want to do that makes you happy, you had a good life. And if you don't, you don't. And freedom is the ability to actually do that. It's the ability to not have a wasted life, which is, you know, it's like super simplistic, but it's just that simple. Like what happens if, you know, someone has to live what is the real difference between taking a young person and killing them or taking a young person and killing their chances of living, of spending the rest of their life the way they want to? Like, there's not too much of a difference. Like, life in prison versus just being killed on the spot. Like, how much of a difference is there, really? It's like one of those kinds of things. So, I mean, if if you don't like freedom, you want people to die. You want babies to die. That's a little, you know, hyperbolic, but you know what I'm saying. So, on a societal level, an economic level, freedom maximizes human potential. It allows for the maximization of human potential. And it is no coincidence that all the freest places in the world are all, over the long run, easily the most prosperous, easily have the most other forms of freedom. And they're just like the best off. Like the human species flourishes from being able to just, you know, pursue what they want to the best of their abilities without the fear of getting whacked over the head. And so that's kind of like so I grew up in Mexico, which is not an entirely first world country, right? It's not, there's way worse places out there for sure, but it's still, I knew people who had dirt floors in their houses. And so you get this like perspective of there's so many people, and many whom I know, like struggle and try their best to get across the border to the US. It's this magical zone where somehow their life can be better, and to the point where they risk everything to get there. And like, what's up with that magical line? It's not like, you know, America better. Like, there's nothing magical about it other than, you know, freedom and the network effects of freedom and just what that can elevate the human species out of, from being, you know, just like at like an animal in the food chain, just struggling to like make it to this point where in developed countries, survival to old age is basically guaranteed. Like not 100%, but it's basically guaranteed. Like if you don't make it, it's like everyone gets really upset. Like, oh, like that was a terrible tragedy. You got hit by a bus or whatever. It's like, it like they're acting like it's not the default state of the world. Like every species, most of them get bumped off before they get old, you know, just the way it happens.
Right.
And so the fact that that doesn't happen anymore in, you know, in the developed countries is amazing. And I kind of want that for the whole world. And I kind of want more of that. Like, what's the next level we can unlock? Like, can we just never die? Can we, you know, can we completely eradicate all forms of like poverty and oppression? Like, probably not in our lifetime, maybe, but maybe. I mean, let's get there.
That's an interesting perspective that you gained with seeing those people risk that to get over the magical line. That was like probably like an aha moment where you're like, well, what's this, what does this line actually represent other than, you know, it's just a line on a map. I mean, there isn't like a line drawn, I mean, fences, but yeah, that magical kind of realization that freedom was like, we don't get that realization from living here because we don't see that, you know, it's just kind of something. And I think it's not appreciated as much, and then as it's being taken away, and that's something else I wanted to ask you was like, how do you see freedoms being removed from us and us kind of being blind to it? Or like some of us realize it. Obviously, I'm asking you how you see being taken away, but I don't think the majority of people out there do realize kind of how their freedoms and are being taken away.
Yeah, it's that's kind of a complicated question because there's always this big effort to take away as many of our freedoms as possible, and it's like thousands of little cuts, and there's a counter movement always, and the biggest thing I think has been in the last, you know, half century has been absolute financial control. Where I mean, like the speech thing, like, you know, people got censored before, they got shot for protesting, like, you know, it's like it's always kind of been terrible. But so I'm not like the fact that you can just go on social media and say whatever you want and there's like no major network that bans you for the most part, you know, maybe Twitter shadow bans you, and like people get mad about that, you know, understandably, but then you just go on something else, like, you know, Float or whatever, and then
right
it's not like the free speech stuff. Like they're really trying hard to limit that. I don't think they're doing as well. But the thing is, like, the financial freedom has been crazy because the limitations to that, I should say, because I mean, if you think about in the past, you know, like way back, you know, people use precious metals to transact, and banks made coins out of them. Then you had banknotes that were representations of that, and they were not always central banks. Like it wasn't always like one bank, and then you got one bank that issues all the stuff, but still has like no control really over what people do with it. You know, there's like money laundering or whatever. I mean, just so easy because it's all paper, you know, big stacks of paper and stuff. But then like when you start, you know, you start going with getting off the gold standard, all of a sudden your value, which is everything you do in life is to create value. Your value is now subject to the whims of other people, which I mean, I'm pretty sure that's like the first time in human history that you don't have to actually shake the gold coins out of their pockets to take taxes from them. You can just magically take it from like a central bank. And then you with the digital money, the digital, you know, digital dollar, something different, but you know what I'm saying? The digital banking system, and especially that combined with like social media and stuff like that, has made it easy to basically control people's entire financial life. And now we're getting to a point where a lot of these, a lot of governments are trying to implement central bank digital currencies, which for the most part are, you know, financial control on steroids. And so there's just this, that's like the biggest dystopian thing in the world is like, you know, we go from paying taxes to tax withholdings to then we don't even see it come out. They just inflate it, you know, to crap, and there you go. And so I think that that's the biggest way people have, you know, succeeded in taking away freedom and are continuing to try to get worse and worse and worse at it. And that's one reason why I'm so into, you know, the resistance, as it were, right? The how do we, you know, upend that problem?
Well, how do we upend the controls that they're kind of screwing down, and through that financial controls and the economic freedom?
You buy Dogecoin. No, just kidding.
Dogecoin.
It's not gonna work. But basically, the entire value proposition of decentralized digital currencies, or they usually call it cryptocurrencies or crypto, is that you can do this kind of stuff without a central, you know, central party kind of mediating this stuff. So I am very into the crypto world for two reasons, because it's, first off, it's control, but it's financial control back to the people. And I've been kind of caring about this since I like heard about the gold standard, and it, you know, when as a kid, and they're like, why aren't we on this anymore? And then everyone just says like, oh, well, you know, they got rid of that and it sucks and we should get back at some point. And it's like, at some point you realize like we're never going back. Like you're not going to convince, like, we lost that battle. And it's just, why are you complaining about like government money? And then you still use, like, shouldn't you be trying to do something else? Like, shouldn't you be trying to do something actionable to get, you know, get your freedom of your money back? And so, you know, it's, I think the cryptos have a very crucial freedom tool, and half it's just like the next step of technological flourishing, like the internet was. It just, the amount of things that are possible now that are being built, that just like it, what people did, it's not like it's a better version of something in the old, it's just, there's new stuff and there's just amazing new things that can, you know, produce so much wealth, so much value, so much, you know, so much more stuff, enable like objective, like even if you don't care about freedom, it's like there's a lot of cool stuff being built. It's like the next stage in human evolution to a certain extent. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
Right. Yeah. Watching it develop has been interesting. Everybody has their, I wish I would have kind of story with crypto. And I found an old notebook that I had that I was trying to figure out how to come up with a couple $100 to buy the Bitcoin shit back in 2013 when I was sitting at work, and I was just dirt poor and couldn't figure out, come up with a couple hundred extra to throw at this thing that might work or might. I didn't even understand it. Like, I just had happened to read an article because it was all over the internet and had a bunch of stuff. And yeah, I kind of promptly threw that notebook out just to not think about it.
Yeah. But I mean, a lot of people with the crypto thing focus on like, oh, I got like getting in early, or like I got in early, I made a fortune or whatever. It's kind of interesting how a lot of people consider cryptocurrency as a tool to get more government currency, which I think is a little bit bananas, right? Which, you know, like, yeah, I mean, like the value pumps, purchasing power pumps, that's good, but it's not like the end goal is that you then sell it for government money in your bank account that then
go right back in. Yeah. That was the, what's your exit plan for crypto? Was like, I haven't spoken on my show quite a bit very much about it, because I'm still trying to wrap my head around how to speak intelligently about it. I understand, and I'm just trying to get there. But somebody had asked me like, well, what's your exit plan with crypto? And I'm like, no, crypto is the exit plan. Like, that's, yeah, that's the way to move away.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's so, exactly it. Sorry, go ahead.
No, for sure.
Well, just as I was saying, I kind of got into this because it clicked that I could just send people money and no one can stop me. And it's, I didn't have to use this one company. I could just put in my little magic words into any app and I just have it. And I kind of understood how the tech worked. And it's like, you know, the it's written in the code, the final supply of at least Bitcoin, you know, there's, and I kind of got it that this is just, it's like digital gold at this point that you can actually use. It's digital cash, right? It's like gold-backed digital cash, kind of. And that's kind of like how I wrap my head around it. And at first, and then eventually it just became like I learned through using. I don't think I've ever bought any crypto. I think I've only ever earned it in, you know, for getting paid to do stuff. And in the local New Hampshire community with like the other people who moved for the Free State Project, you don't have to really ask people if they'll take crypto for payments. It's just, it's assumed that it's yes. And it's always kind of been that way. And so even before there was a, you know, this is going back to like 2011, 2012, like before I was out there, but way back there, like this is before it was like a thing anyone really knew about, but you could kind of get into the local economy and buy all kinds of stuff from, you know, individuals. And it just, like, my entirety of the experience in this technology has been just been using it as everyday money. And then somewhere around 2015, I got, you know, I was into it for a couple of years, but I started to get a little bit uncomfortable with how much I was telling people about it. And like, oh, you should do this. And I started thinking like, wow, I've said this whole be your own bank thing a whole lot. And I don't know if that, like... like I better put up or shut up. And so I decided, you know, I'm going to stop getting paid in government money by the end of the year. And, you know, then I did. And, you know, the rest, as they say, is history, more or less. And it wasn't until next summer, like of 2016, that I got rid of my bank account. And then that's just been kind of the way I've been doing it ever since. And it was, in especially in the early years, very like, very kind of clandestine, like, you know, stitched together this and that. Like I have like three people that will actually take it directly, and then I have to do a bunch of indirect services and some loopholes for the rest, or I have to, like, you know, bum stuff off of friends, and like, you know, it was a lot more complicated. And every passing year it's gotten easier and easier and easier, to where now I feel like I can just recommend to the average person, like within like an hour of just showing them how to do stuff, they could be living entirely off of crypto and just have no government money at all. And it's right, that easy today, and it's going to be much, much, much easier in the future.
Right. Yeah. I can't imagine you watching it from like being in it whole hog since 2015 till now, where I'm just probably, it's been on my radar, but really kind of started interacting in the last maybe four years, 2022, probably 2018, and watching the ease of use in that time period. I can only, and it's only accelerating, like it's significantly more ease of use every month, and it's like exponential. So I can only imagine from 2015 on how that change has been. But
yeah,
so this is how we fight the freedoms being taken away. So and crypto is a decentralized, what, like, everybody says it's funny money, it's a roulette wheel. This is the kind of comebacks I get, like, what is it, and well, how do you explain it, like what's it backed by, and you kind of look at them and say, well, what's the dollar backed by? But is crypto all it's cracked up to be? Is it a flash in the pan? Is it the thing that's going to be here and then all of a sudden it's just going to go to zero and go away? Is it really all cracked up to be?
Definitely. It depends on who's cracking what up specifically, obviously. But as as a technology, absolutely. And the thing is, like, it makes you really re-evaluate your base assumptions of a lot of things, like money. Can you imagine explaining money to people? Imagine there's a civilization that didn't have money. And you're like, oh, yeah, there's this stuff. And, like, how do you explain money? It's a given to us. And so that's why a lot of people just think, well, this is what it is. And this is, you know, this is just the way it's always been. And they don't really have, you know, like, why do we care about this shiny rock? Like, that you just like, why would you kill people with a shiny rock and trade? Like, why is this good, but then this isn't? I mean, the answer to all of this is people value things and they trade based on their values. Like, if I, and it's basic, super basic economics, but, you know, if I have an object, like, I raise chickens, you raise cows, and it just happens to be that's what I got chickens, you got cows. I like beef more, you like chicken more, and we make the trade. We trade like this much for this much. We're both happier, even though we didn't create more stuff. But we create more value, more happiness. And at some point, you had to have a way of communicating that value more effectively. That's all money is a tool for communicating human value. It's a technology specifically for communicating human value. And then, of course, you had like little rocks or coins or whatever that you used to like, well, this represents all the work I put in here that I can then trade for this. And then, of course, it evolves up until, you know, paper, pieces of paper that are, you know, stuff written on them and stuff. And then it, you know, numbers in a bank account, and then now like numbers on a digital, like a decentralized digital ledger. And all it is a technology for expressing human value, what we value. And that's all money's ever been. And money has suffered from a poverty of the technology in the past. You know, just like everything, you know, stuff keeps going, stuff keeps progressing. And it's just like saying like the written word, like it's a form of communication for sure. You know, it's a form of sharing your thoughts. And there's a lot of like intonations and facial expressions and tone and all this stuff that just is not communicated by the written word. It doesn't mean, you know, it's just an imperfect communication technology. And right. So, you know, just like speaking also it's not a technology, it's just the way people evolve to communicate, I guess. But at some point, if you can communicate telepathically, that'll be a better form of communication than even speaking. And so I think a lot of people get hung up on, you know, money. They like, there's no, like, why does fiat currency have value? Why does government money have value? And that's like a long, complicated thing. Why does gold even have value? It's like, what is gold backed by? Gold's backed by nothing. Gold is just gold. And the only reason it has value is because people believe it has value. And the only reason they believe it has value is because it has historically allowed them to store and communicate their value easier. It's just gold is just a rock, but like gold in bars and, you know, coins and things like that is an information technology for expressing value. And the reason why cryptocurrency is valuable is because it is the next evolution of that expressive technology of value. And it's getting to the point where a lot of it is just like replacing and superseding old money. But we're also getting to a spot where it's starting to capture and communicate that value that old money just doesn't even do. And this is one of those things that like really, again, it's a constant learning journey for me, right? But like, this is one of those things in the nonprofit world, which I used to do. I used to be a fundraiser. I used to, you know, run the development department of some nonprofit and ask people for money to run the thing. And it's kind of weird. Like, people value things like let's just say charity, like helping the poor or whatever. Let's just use that as example. People value that, but they don't pay for it. Like, no one goes and like buys their like monthly supply of charity at the charity store. It just doesn't happen. Like, there's this giant void in what people are willing to pay for, but they value it a lot, but somehow the technology is broken. It doesn't work. And so then you have to have a weird middleman like I used to be that just goes and asks people for money, takes a cut, and like gathers the resources that they wouldn't pay directly for the service and just redistribute it there. And it's, you know, it's great, but it's also inefficient. And I think that now we're starting to enter this era of where we're going to be able to start paying for those things directly. So for example, this is where it really gets down the rabbit hole, right? But like the NFT world, if you can sell a non-fungible token as a creator, it's like you're fundraising for your creative thing, but you're actually selling people something that they value. And it's not like it's, you know, like a one of one, you know, or a one of 100 issue of this, like it's like a autographed, you know, poster or something, for example. It's like, if you're an artist, okay, you just sell merchandise, but it's not merchandise, it's something else. And then a lot of people are selling these things that then grant exclusive rights in them, to where anyone who has these things gets in this exclusive chat room to do this or whatever. And then they're starting to do like token drops to holders of these things. Like if you buy a limited edition NFT of this, then when I make royalties or whatever, I can distribute those automatically to whoever happens to hold these things. And even if you just happen to sell yours because you just got done, like the other person who then has it still gets that. You know, it's like there's just a lot of stuff that becomes more efficient. And now all of a sudden it opens up a lot of these avenues for like making a living off of doing cool stuff that otherwise it was just hard to make a living off of. And it doesn't, and just being able to give equity in things. So imagine if every single, and the problem with this also, unfortunately, is the government is the problem with most things. But in this case in particular, you know, there's all like the securities laws. If you give people equity in company or whatever, it's and all that kind of stuff. But forget government for a second. It's easy enough to just every time you either buy a product at a store, or you are an employee and get paid from the store, you can have a model where the company gives what they would call like a governance token out for each of these things. And then you get to actually vote on things that happen in the company based on that. Again, you could set it up this way, right? Or at least you get to say, if you bought product at the store, or you were an employee, you end up getting a certain amount of like ownership or equity in the company just for like receiving dividends or whatever. So then it's just, and then it's like the whole thing of like the, you know, you go back to like the Karl Marx nonsense about, you know, like the seizing the means of production, all that stuff. There's some kind of like hint of truth on where that attitude comes from. It's just a completely stupid, wrong-headed way of approaching it. But it's like capitalism is solving communism eventually, right? Because at some point, you know, you will be able to kind of not have the workers, you know, not have any equity in like the company they built from the ground up or whatever else. But more importantly, you'll be able to have all these systems out there publicly for anyone to audit and look at. So you can have just, you know, a ranking of like the best companies to work for based on the way they involve their employees in governance decisions and equity in the company. Whereas like right now, that's just not a thing. It's too, you know, it's, you have stock options and stuff, but like, it's a little, it's not as like,
what the stock option get you other than a little bit of money. It doesn't, it's not like I'm going to get stock options and go to the board meeting and be like, I'm Mr. Deeds and I own X amount of the company and I'm making this decision. Whereas in a tokenization where you're earning incremental over time of like a portion of a vote in a decision that makes you a little more vested in that company, I guess.
So yeah.
You were talking about the direct payment and the value and the charity and whatnot. And I'm kind of going down that rabbit hole right now with setting up like value for value exchange and using like podcast 2.0 and, and the fountain podcast player and streaming sats and stuff like that. It's a really interesting model. Cause I've had like a donation tab on my shop, on my website for a few years now. And the difference in interaction with being able to just do value for value exchange or someone actually going and physically purchasing a donation has been eye-opening. You put it out there and you tell people that it's there.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like people are, you know, calibrated to work a certain way. And like that's why certain like user experience designers of apps and stuff, they figure out things like, well, where do your eyes initially go? Where do they immediately go? Which color scheme makes them the happiest using this? Like there's these like weird little subtle ways of like how, you know, human performance works. And a lot of these like economic incentives are the sort of way that we as a species have historically known, what are we going to do that's going to make sure we don't die? You know, what's going to be good for the survival of the species? And
right,
these codes are still kind of programmed into our brains. And so we're still at the point where you can design a system that just incentivizes the right kinds of behavior. And it's just like there was this hard break in the old economic model with like nonprofits and stuff. And they were kind of trying to, like, for example, one thing I realized is you can get people to give at a much higher level if you will give them an exclusive trinket. Like, you will, like, if you give them like an exclusive, like, you get like a cufflinks or a little pin or something if you're at this level, people will give a lot more for this, like, otherwise crap that's not worth the extra money they're giving. But just because, you know, they're part, they not only get a physical thing that's exclusive, but then they also get into a exclusivity club of, like, you know, where they feel like I'm special. And that is a product you're selling.
The PBS model.
Yeah,
exactly. The PBS get your tote bag for a donation.
Yeah, it's so, like, I mean, it sounds a little like weird, and like some people may even say dystopian sounding, but I think it'd be great if, like, why aren't you, like, if you like, if you are down on your luck and on the streets, can't you just sell NFTs to get out of it? Like, and it sounds it like people aren't ready to hear this, by the way, but like, why doesn't the homeless person on the street sell you an NFT, and then they sell enough NFTs of like, look at me, I'm like struggling, here you go. So I'm, you know, and then at some point they get on their feet and they're, you know, successfully like, look, and here's my little proof that I invested in this individual when he was down on his luck. And of course you could always like offer perks and stuff, but let's not get too complicated, but just like the basic thing where instead of here, I gave him some money, it feels like you're losing money. But whereas if you buy something they're offering, which is that you believed in me when I was down and out kind of digital representation, all of a sudden, you know, you start to get out of these tough situations in a lot easier of a way, in a lot more of like a collaborative way. And yeah, it's kind of, it's crazy to see where, you know, the world could be in just a few years, as far as, you know, people maximizing the short time they have on this earth, just being able to, you know, like, my whole thing is like monetize everything. Like, you know, it's like get money out of politics. People like to say, no, get money in everything, because money is value. It is the value communication tool that we have. And it's kind of segregatable. This is what you can pay for, but you can't pay for this stuff. And it's like, well, you should be able to pay for everything. And it doesn't always have to be the same money, right? Like, for example, you get rewards points at your, you go get a coffee, 10 in a row, you get like a punch card, you get a free one or something. There's like loyalty points and stuff that are only redeemable for certain things in certain areas. They're not like money, but like tokenize everything, do that. And then it's just crazy. And you don't have to like do it like forcibly, right? This is just already happening. It'll be very just fascinating to see where the world goes after this, with this great flourishing that we can have, thanks to the ability to have value, to express value directly for everything in all the different ways, and to store and trade and invest in weird little pockets of value, you know? So like, for example, you could like buying, like imagine if you had a little, where the logo is in the corner of this thing, if that was just an open space that you sold the digital property to, that you sold an NFT of that little spot, and whoever has the NFT can, you know, put whatever they want there, basically. And then someone buys it, and then they sit on it, and then at some point they might, your show takes off and you're like competing with Joe Rogan for numbers and all that kind of stuff. And then they sell it that they bought for like, you know, a couple hundred bucks or whatever, for billions even, or millions or whatever, right? It is. They can just, you know, How cool is that? Like, and this is, it's easy for people.
This is what I'm messing around with. You kind of brought that up, and I had this overlay in my StreamYard, but I've been messing around with this is a link to a Spark Wallet Pay page for Lightning tipping, and so I've been messing around with kind of putting that on the screen, and haven't quite figured it out yet if I want to use it or where how I want to do it. But then you were talking about selling it, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's next level. That's selling advertising on your screen. Just like a corporate TV does in between. So,
but like in selling a permanent piece, and the thing is with these secondary markets with NFTs, for example, you could program in a resale fee. So every time someone resells it, you get 2% of the sale. So people just keep selling it back and forth over, you know, like as it goes. And even though, you know, it's like they're kind of ticket scalping almost that little spot. But then you benefit from every single transaction there. And so you're just like,
yeah, I heard Jack Spirko talk about an NFT model with selling with an author and books and then the resale, setting like a minimum resale and then a percentage that goes back to the author. But then the owner of the NFT of the book gets whatever percentage. And really, it kind of opened my brain to starting thinking differently about it, other than the like, monkey picture, what the fuck are they doing? they had to make it ridiculous to make it better, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is we're the let me hit on the darker note though is that or the reality check I should say is that while this stuff is awesome, like I would say a good 80% of the crypto space is all like garbage. You know, I'm not just saying like individual projects. I'm seeing even the best ones have like 80% of their value is just based on like the gambling speculation kind of value. And it's just like 80%+ of like probably what's being used in stuff is just for those purposes. And like the real, if it was based on what people, its utility and what people are using it for today, it would have a significantly lower valuation. Right. And it's just like, we're still very early to this whole thing. And like when people give criticisms about the casino, you know, it's true. Like people, you know, I'm here talking about like, oh, with NFTs, this and that. And like, you know, homeless people selling NFTs and all this like stuff that people aren't ready to hear. Part of the reason they're not ready to hear that is when they think of NFTs, they think of one of those stupid monkeys that just like, here you go, I'm selling the monkey. And then it millions. And it just, that doesn't have value. No, that's just a flash in the pan. That's going away. You know, no offense to Dogecoin, but that's going away too at some point. I don't care how much Elon tries to pump it. But like, there's a bunch of these things. It just, it's okay. It's criticisms of the crypto space, as far as I've been able to tell, a lot of them are completely valid. They're just, they're just not a valid way of characterizing the entire space. And more importantly, its potential. But it's just, you know, it is what it is. And like, I mean, you're using it for your maximum potential. You're not, I mean, you could be a degenerate crypto gambler behind the scenes. I wouldn't know, but I'm just saying, I can see you're using some real stuff out of it. So it's real for you today. So why not keep doing that? Why not expand it? You know?
Yeah. I'm kind of rolling as much as I can into it as I legitimately can exit, and it's a formulated plan and it's kind of methodical, but yeah, that's kind of eventually where I want to end up, kind of exiting that fiat system. And it's kind of circles back to what you talked about in the beginning, just getting away from that control of, we see what happened north of us when people were just donating $10 to a rally and then they had all their shit shut down. Well, I don't want that to be able to happen to me. Not that I'm necessarily ever going to speak out against the government. I mean, I probably will. I probably am already, but I turned on the microphone. So, but I don't want them to be able to shut me off. And I've realized that working with cryptocurrencies has allowed me to insulate a little bit, and precious metals and whatever. It makes it easier. It makes me sleep better at night.
Yeah. Well, let me cut like anyone listening, it's super easy to try out using crypto. It's not like nothing. You just have to do a little bit of work, but it's not right now. So, and the problem with crypto is that it is so there's so many little pockets of communities working on their own thing, and it's not a lot of unity as far as, like, you know, everyone has their favorite project and wants to use them. And a lot of times, you know, people shy away from what works because it's not the thing that they like, or then they rebuild the exact same thing. They kind of duplicate work because it's like, well, yeah, but that's on the wrong project. I don't like this and stuff. And that is the part that is a little bit, that is like the learning curve. And it is something that makes it harder to specifically tell. Like, I would, like, you know, the simple days when I could just tell people, buy Bitcoin, use Bitcoin, here you go. And it was just, that's it. And now it's like, no, that's done. That's so done. But I would encourage, like, anyone who's actually, like, curious on trying to use this, all you really need is two apps, and then you can, you know, you got to buy it. So let's add like a third one, right? So this is like a little, you know, homework for people that want to try it out and see what it's like. Go to, let's just pick Coinbase, right? Because that's something people are familiar with. Go to Coinbase, mm-hmm. Get a Coinbase account, and buy some Dash. This is what I have experience with the most. And also, it's like what I can recommend for people in the US where I know it's just like literally two apps, you could do everything. So you buy some Dash, and of course, there's like the official Dash wallet that you find in places is how you like store it once you get it out of Coinbase. Coinbase, you buy it, and you take it out into your digital pocket. And then there's two apps. One is BitRefill, and the other is Dash Direct. And BitRefill lets you buy like all kinds of stuff. But the reason I'm talking about that is they have a bill pay system where you can, with crypto, and Dash is one of the ones they support, you can pay all your bills, like your utility bills, your probably your property taxes. I don't know, you like all your bills, basically. So that's like everything.
Is that one word or two? BitRefill?
What was that?
Like, is that two words? Like BitRefill? I'm gonna put it in the chat here. So it's...
yeah, I'll put it. So BitRefill for bills, Coinbase to buy the Dash. There we go.
Perfect.
Dash Direct to spend it. So Dash Direct is an interesting app that lets you. It has two functionalities. One has like a gift card functionality, and the second it has a crypto card functionality. The gift card functionality, you open a map. It's like a geolocated map, and it says like, what are businesses close to you that where you can spend this? And then let's say Chipotle. Okay, Chipotle pops up, and it's like right around the corner. You go into the Chipotle. It's like, how much is your burrito? Like $12.79. You put $12.79 and hit buy, and then you buy a gift code right there, turn the phone around, they scan it, and there you go. And you can save like up to like 5, maybe 10% on depending on where you're going with this. So you could basically buy most big box stuff for that. For everything else, this is like very new that just got released. There's a crypto MasterCard functionality in there. It's like a virtual card, but they also have physical card. The big difference, because there's a million things like Coinbase has a card, all these things, this one is not tied to your identity at all. So you can, and I've, you know, done, the company's done tons of due diligence on this. It is legal, despite sounding almost like it's not. But basically, for a limit of like $1,000 a day or at a time per load, you can basically spend, it's like a prepaid card, kind of. But you can basically, literally anywhere MasterCard is accepted, i.e. the entire country of the U.S., you can spend it all in between. So just those two apps, you can literally live 100% without fiat currency today, unless you want to go to your local tacos, cash only taco stand, and you can't get them to take crypto directly. And so,
right,
that's the Dash experience, right? I'm sure there's the other coins you can buy on Coinbase, BitRefill, including Lightning, right? Yeah,
that's what I was gonna say. Like, Cash App's throwing Lightning in, to where you can take Lightning and send cash to someone that doesn't take crypto. So you're getting away from that taco truck to take Cash App.
Yeah. Yeah, if they have Cash App, you can do that too. It's so, but so if people have like, if people know enough about crypto to like blaze their own path, absolutely go do it. I would encourage people to try to earn and spend as much as possible and just like have it as a tool, because then you don't really care what the market does if you just, I'm living free. But for people who like are super new, don't know where to go, I just laid out the quick little dash path to just 100% live on crypto, right? And you can just try that out, and then you get bored of it and try steal. I'm going to mix and match. I'm going to pay my bills with Litecoin. I'm going to do most of my other stuff with Dash, but then I'm going to use, you know, Bitcoin on the Lightning Network to then stream sats to this and buy this other thing there, and like eventually mix and match it.
Yeah, that's
playground. You can do whatever you want.
Yep. Yep. Hey, we're coming up on an hour. You got some stuff to do. I got a bunch of stuff to do this weekend. If people enjoyed what they heard and they're curious about more, where can they find you? Let them know. I have all your links in the show notes, but shout it out for those audio people that just want to kind of find you and hear more of what you have to say.
Yeah. So Twitter, Float, Gab, everywhere else is at the Desert Links. And as you can see on the screen there, Desert is in Dry Place, Links is in Kitty Cat. And the Desert Links. And it just pretty much everywhere. Or you can look at my name on like Facebook and maybe MeWe or something like that. And then I run this show called Digital Cash Network, which if you're looking in the live chat, you see I've been chatting in there. But if not, just look on YouTube, Odyssey, audio podcast stuff like Spotify, all that stuff, Digital Cash Network. And there you go. I just have some how to live on crypto stuff that's a little bit old that I'm about to update this year with, to basically all the stuff I've been telling you about now, just make it a lot easier. So yeah, that's kind of where you were to do, but just you have the tools of your freedom today. They're there, and start figuring out how to use it, because you, like, I might come out with a guide of like, here's how to everything, but the only way you're going to learn anything is by doing. So start living free today. So you get good at it before you need to be good at it.
Until you have to learn it out, to learn all of it all at once, and you make a big mistake, and that's not good. So yeah, definitely take that advice and start messing around with small increments and figuring it out. Hey man, I really appreciate you being here. I really enjoyed the chat, and I'm looking forward to kind of diving in and transitioning to be more totally crypto like you are. So I really appreciate it. I love following you on all your socials, and I encourage everybody to kind of do that too. So any last words, or if not, we can wrap it up here and get out of here.
Well, there's a quote by the great Revolutionary General John Stark: if live free or die, for death is not the greatest of evils. So pick that apart. Live, your choices are ultimately live free or die, and remind that there's worse things than dying, right? We all die, right? But it's just, what do we get to do before we're gone? Do you want to live free and then die quicker, or do you want to just not live free, have a miserable life, and then eventually die anyway? Well, words, right.
We're none of us are getting out. We might not know it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, hey, man, I really appreciate it. I'm going to drop you off here, close everything out, and if you gotta take off, you gotta take off. If not, hang out for a second, and I will chat with you after. So, really appreciate being on.
All right, cool. Yeah, likewise. Thanks.
All right, that was a great chat. I really encourage you to look in the show notes and go check him out on all his socials. Just click any of those links. It's Saturday, guys. I got a bunch to do. We got to get out of here and get a bunch of camper work done. Catch you on Monday morning. We will do a recap, have a new item of the week, and do that daily show every day this week. That quote was great. And then I see Mike over there throwing another quote in the chat. So I really appreciate everybody hanging out. As always, you can catch me at thelostproject.com on Twitch, Telegram, YouTube, Odyssey, Rumble, Gab. On that Fountain FM 2.0 or Fountain.fm and Podcast 2.0 value for value exchange. And yeah, I really appreciate this interview today. Have a great weekend, guys. Make it productive. Hang out in that Telegram chat, t.me/lotschat. And we will catch up with you on Monday morning. I can see the light.